Good evening, and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. My name is Tom Waller. I'm chair of the club's Business and Leadership Forum and your host for today's program, which is entitled Nine Principles for Transformative Leadership. We want to welcome our audience here this evening and invite you to visit us on the Internet often at commonwealthclub.org to learn about the many fine program events which are held here at the club. And now it's my pleasure to introduce our speaker. Rita George is an author and transformational strategist who has empowered and inspired thousands of individuals and hundreds of businesses to transform their personal and professional lives. A former business columnist for the San Francisco Examiner and contributor to several professional publications, notably California Lawyer and The Executive Female, Rita has been featured in numerous media outlets, including NBC, ABC, and CBS News. Over the past 30 years, Rita has held prominent leadership positions in over 20 community, political, and professional organizations, including the Commonwealth Club and former San Francisco Mayor Dianne Feinstein's Fiscal Advisory Committee. Rita earned a degree in business management from Southern Illinois University. She is a former faculty member of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce Institute for Organizational Management, University of California School of Medicine, and University of California Business and Management School. Please join me in welcoming Rita George, who will be telling us about the groundbreaking model, the EDGE Transformational Program.
Thank you, Tom. Can everybody hear me? You know, the world's in crisis, but that's not news to any of us, or is it? But what many of us don't know is this is the most profound time in history. And the fundamental changes that are happening are going to affect us in untold ways. And as is the case for most of us, when a crisis occurs, it forces all of us to take action. But with the crisis, there's also opportunity. And the opportunity before us today is to look at who we are, where we've been, and where we're going. And this is how it happened for me. It was 4 o'clock on a sunny afternoon. I was slowly walking across a bridge at King Frok's Palace in Alexandria, Egypt, and there was a slight breeze cooling me off, and I was looking out at the clear blue sea. And contrast that with what was going on with an inner level. I was torn with grief because my dear friend Richard had just died. And I was in pain, I was grieving, and his loss was very profound. And it took me a while to look inward, but I did in the middle of that bridge. And this is what I discovered, that I was always chasing the elusive more. I wanted to achieve more, I wanted to acquire more, and more was never enough. But I thought that more would complete my life. But it didn't. I wasn't happy. I felt empty. Something was drastically wrong. I just didn't know what it was. And then something shocking happened. And surprisingly, I heard my inner voice. You are to transform your life. Now, we all have an inner voice. But most of the time, we don't listen to it. The inner voice messages or the deep inner knowing that comes from within us. Because sometimes it's just not convenient to implement those messages, is it? But the message was, you are to transform your life. And in that moment, I had a choice. I could literally walk backward across that bridge into my past, or I could walk forward across the bridge into my future, follow my inner voice, and transform my life. Now, I realized I had plateaued, I was stuck, and I was without purpose and deep meaning in my life. So I made a crucial decision. With a leap of faith, I literally jumped off the edge into the scary unknown. And then I returned to San Francisco 3 weeks later, and I intuitively knew that I was facing a serious spiritual crisis of meaning, and I didn't know where it was going to take me. But step by step, I began to confront my fears. And believe me, I had a lot of fears. I call them the many faces of fears that we have. I was looking for social approval. I was scared of this. I felt insecure. I was unworthy of success. But step by step, I confronted them. And then step by step, I discovered the 9-Edge principles. And I used those principles to transform my life and to resolve the inner crisis of meaning. Now, many people are facing a crisis today. Job loss, bankruptcy, foreclosure, serious health issues, marital problems, relationship conflicts. The list goes on. The world crisis has pushed us all off the edge into the absolute abyss of the unknown. And the crisis is building daily. And it's impacting upon everyone. And it's not just about the economy. It's not just about the financial markets. And it's not just about the stock market. It's much larger than that. When Robert Strauss and Neil Howell wrote their book in 1987, well, it was 97, actually, they talked about four cycles of history. The first cycle is the high. The second high cycle is the spiritual revolution, the spiritual awakening. The third high is the unraveling. And the unraveling is like the disintegration of what we're seeing with the automobile industry, what we're seeing in the educational institutions, healthcare, along with the financial markets. And the fourth crisis and the fourth turning is always, the fourth turning is the crisis cycle of history. So the last crisis cycle of history began with Black Tuesday into the Great Depression and ended with World War II. The high was ushered in with the presidencies of Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy. The consciousness revolution and spiritual revolution began with the civil rights movement, the women's movement, the gay movement, and it culminated with the tax revolts in 1980, in about the mid-80s. And then we had the unraveling cycle. And that began, and every unraveling cycle of history begins with a backlash against the consciousness revolution. And that's when we see the culture wars. And there's always a high technology boom, and then we see the disintegration of all our institutions. And these cycles happen over and over again. A normal cycle normally occurs between 16 and 22 years, except for the Civil War, which was a crisis cycle, but only lasted 5 years. Now, we've been seeing the disintegration of this unraveling for years. We witnessed the greed grow out of control, but we've done nothing about it because actually we've been paralyzed. And in every culture of denial, outside forces force us to recognize the reality that we are going to be pushed off the edge and a crisis cycle begins again. And this is where we are today, in a crisis cycle of history. Now, we could have averted the severity of the crisis, the dot-com and bust, the tragic events of 9/11, or the real estate boom and bust, but we didn't. We chose not to. Because we've basically been sitting back and watching what's happened, paralyzed, overwhelmed. But in every crisis, an old world is replaced with a new world, the known with the unknown, the safe from the scary. And that's the marvelous thing about a crisis. It's an opportunity for each of us. Now, as greed is a driving force in every unraveling cycle of history, integrity is the driving force in a crisis cycle. And we're just beginning to see lessening of greed, and we're bringing in and ushering more integrity. And that's going to continue throughout the next so many years. Now, my beliefs about the impending crisis in 1998 were confirmed when I read The Fourth Turning. And then when I developed the 9 principles 10 years prior to that, I really saw that they were validated through the book. So where does this leave us now? Now that the crisis is here, what can each of you do, and what will you do about it? The 9 principles are a foundation for transformation and profound change. They are, 1, power. 2, responsibility. 3, trust. 4, commitment. 5, focus attention. 6, acceptance. 7, non-attachment. 8, alignment, and number 9, interrelationship. And the principles actually unfold in a sequential order. They build one upon the other, and you'll understand that when I start talking about some of the stories. And you will see them in action through the compelling stories that I'm going to share with you from some of my clients. And through these stories, you may see a reflection of yourself, a relevance of yourself in these stories. So what it is you need to do is look within and see, how can I apply these principles to any fears that I have internally? And in that moment of awareness, each of the people in these stories face the same dilemma as I did on that bridge in Alexandria, Egypt. Do I want to live my life with fear, doubt and uncertainty, chaos and confusion? Or do I want to seize the opportunity of the crisis, transform my life, and live my life with vision, integrity, and wisdom? So what we're going to see through these stories is how each of these people chose to transform their lives from the known to the unknown, from the safe to the scary, from the unrest to the success. So we all have a choice. You can live in the past, in the old world, and be attached to the status quo, or you can enter a new world with newly learned skills and qualities and tools to succeed in a crisis cycle of history. So let's begin. I'm going to talk about three stories. I'm not going to talk about how I turned and worked with clients, big businesses, and turned them around. I'm going to talk about ordinary people who turned into extraordinary leaders by embracing these principles. And the first story is Steve. When I met Steve, it was about 1994. He was 38 years of age. He's about 5'10". He's ruggedly handsome. When he comes into a room, he lights up a room. People always pause and pay attention to Steve, especially when he talks, because he's very charismatic and he's poetic. Steve was a wine broker, and he was extremely frustrated because he had not experienced success in his life. At least that's what he said. And like many people who attempt to be successful, he was taking these personal growth development programs for over 15 years, and he finally just gave up. Now, can anybody relate to that? So, in an effort to get to know Steve better, and this is what I do when I'm really talking to people, I want to know, through a series of questions, what happened to you that you would feel like you're stuck or not successful. So here's what Steve told me. I had polio. I was 3 when I was in the hospital, and I underwent a number of operations and physical therapy. But, he said, I was so happy basking in the warmth and the love and the gentleness of the other kids and the nurses. He would jump into his wheelchair every day, twirl around, and laugh. He thought it was glorious that he was wearing braces and he would be using crutches the rest of his life. It's no easy feat to get there, but he did it because of the love in that unit in that hospital. But he returned home, beaming with joy and happiness. But that would soon change. As soon as his father opened the door to greet him and Steve was smiling, his father said, Steve, wipe that smile off your face. You have nothing to be happy about. Next, he would hear, you're selfish, you're self-centered, and the only person you care about is yourself. The third comment was, you're just going to have to work harder than everybody else because you're just not normal, Steve. You have to take a breath when you hear these comments, because the negative programming starts setting in. And with this, Steve became very afraid, and he thought, I'm never going to succeed, and I'm never going to be normal. A few years later, happiness returned, and he discovered he was an artist. And then suddenly, 2 of his best friends died. He turned to his father's church. Yes, his father was a minister, for solace, and he still felt empty. And then he got real excited, and he shared with his mother that he was attracted to a woman because he had discovered that he was attractive. And then his mother said to him, but Steve, you're going to have to find a woman who takes care of you the rest of your life. And at that point, he felt utterly and totally inadequate. Now, all of us have some negative patterns. We got those patterns when we were kids. And most of the time, we don't even know we have those patterns. And those patterns are blocking us from being more successful. They're blocking us from developing our limitless potential. So after graduation from college, Steve began to paint and work part-time in art. And for 13 years, he worked as a wine broker and painted on weekends. So he had this quest for happiness and success, and he wanted to banish all those fears. So I asked Steve, look inside, Steve. You need to discover who are you. How do you see yourself and other people in the world around you? And this is what Steve told me. I'm a cripple, Rita. I'm handicapped. He had given his power away to all of his parents' belief about who they thought he was. So I said to Steve, how could a man who perceives himself as a crippled, handicapped person, who thinks they're inadequate and believes they could never succeed or be normal, actually succeed? He thought about it for a moment, and he reflected upon it. And then he went, oh, I see. I can't succeed. And I said, really? So whose beliefs are they, Steve? Yours or your parents? So I said, Steve, we're going to develop a little action plan with the first four principles. And we started with the first one. And I asked him to choose one sport where he was going to confront his fears and where he was going to discover that he wasn't a cripple. And he was going to discover that he had given his power away to all those fear and negative patterns. With the second principle, responsibility, he told me he had entered and signed up for 1 week at jiu-jitsu camp. And then the fear set in. It was unsurmountable. He was paralyzed again. So my question to Steve is, which it is to many people, when you're at that point where you're paralyzed with fear, how are you going to feel, Steve, if you don't go to camp and don't confront your fears? And how are you going to feel if you go to jiu-jitsu camp and you discover you're really not crippled? Off to camp he went. And then it came up to the principle of trust. And when he was watching all the other people do the tricky moves on the mat, the fear started setting in again. He said, I'm going to look like a freak. I'm going to look like a fool. But he walked up to the mat, and he started listening to all the messages in his head, all the messages from his father and all the messages from his mother and all the fear. And then he said, no, trust. I can do this. I can do this. I can succeed. And that's what principle of trust is about. He threw his crutches aside. He hit the mat face down, and then he tumbled. And he had an exhilarating week at camp. But then he returned home, and the fear set in again. See, his physical body was deteriorating. He wasn't strong. The doctor told him, if you exercise, Steve, the odds are you're going to be paralyzed. You could even die. Because of polio, half of his nervous system was collapsed. So now it came to the principle of trust again. I asked him to wait, and he would have the answer on what he was to do about the situation with his body. And a week later, he was driving down the street, and he had a vision of himself. 5 years later, he was overweight. And 10 years, he was in a wheelchair. He knew what he had to do. And on to the principle of commitment. He decided to do three things. Number one, he signed up for a gym and started exercising every other day. Two, he signed up for a jiu-jitsu class weekly. And three, Steve started walking, what we call vaulting when you have crutches, 1 mile a day. And vaulting is equal to a 10-mile walk for the rest of us. Then, after a few years, Steve felt he was succeeding finally. He decided to take more risk. And he quit his job, he went off to Bali, and he painted for 6 glorious months. And there he came to terms with the belief system of the Hindus, that if you're disabled, you're a bad person, there is something drastically wrong with you. So then he would confront that negativity. But he returned to the Bay Area, having let go of all that programming, and he had a very successful Balinese art showing. Now, Steve always believed prior to this point that he would fail. He was destined to fail to live outside the community because of his family's beliefs. But now, in this moment, today, he sees himself standing in his power, taking responsibility for his body, trusting his deep inner knowing, and he's made a firm commitment to help others discover their courage and their commitment to fulfill their limitless potential. And he happens to be an inspiration to people in his community. Now, all of us have the capacity to live a full life, like Steve, to seize the opportunity of the crisis and to develop the inner resources that we need to survive and flourish over the next 20 years. And all of us can live a life of power and make a significant contribution in the world. So the crisis will end successfully if we as a country decide to shift our worldview from one of fear to one of cooperation, collaboration, connection, and unity to solve our problems. We all have a choice. We can either stay wed to the past in the old world and blame, complain, and justify, and make excuses. And personally, I think we're seeing way too much of that behavior in Washington. Or we can create a vision of the unique way we want to live in the world, transform ourselves, and bask in the glory of our success, much like Steve. So Steve's story illustrates the important principles of power, responsibility, trust, and commitment. Use those four principles to achieve your goals and resolve conflicts and crises that occur in your life. Use these principles to increase your vitality, well-being, and financial security, and use them to live with integrity, honor your inner voice and intuition, and use the principles to develop courage, inner strength, and resiliency. The fifth principle is focus attention. Let's meet Vicky. There's two sides to Vicky's story, but her life resembles the business life of many people today. She was ambitious and focused on making money. And then facing the devastating loss of an enormous amount of income, she began blaming others for her problems. Feeling hopeless, powerless, restless, and helpless, she started thinking, how can I turn my business around? Is anyone thinking about that today in this room? So prior to 1994, Vicky was the number one mortgage loan agent in her bank. And then the feds raised interest rates, a little different what's happening today, and her business plummeted. And she was trapped in fear, totally confused, anxious, overwhelmed, and paralyzed. But I started unraveling her story. I asked her questions. What's the atmosphere like in your office, Vicky? She said, well, that's all we talk about is how there's no business out there. If only the feds hadn't raised the interest rates, everything would be okay. We'd have business. If only this happened, then that would happen. I said, ah. So what was interesting is, see, Vicky didn't understand that all that negativity had been programming her to think that she could not be successful and be the number one salesperson in her firm anymore. Actually, that's what happens to all of us. We get trapped in negativity, and we don't even know that's where we are. So I asked her, aha, Vicky, what do you think you could do about this? She started thinking about it, and she said, huh, well, if I wasn't negative, maybe I'd be successful again. So she finally understood that she had been buying into all the negative programming of all the people she was listening to in her office, and that it had robbed her of her power, her responsibility, her trust, her commitment, and her focused attention to succeed. It had all dissipated because of the negativity. So what can we learn from Vicky? Begin with develop an action plan to maintain your power. And I always say no to people. Say no to negativity. Vicky even shocked herself, because prior to that point, she wasn't that assertive. And she literally started walking away from anybody who was negative. And basically, the rest of us should too. With responsibility, she looked at how to protect herself, how to set limits, how to set boundaries. And she would not listen to blame and complain and people who were justifying and making excuses anymore. She said enough, and she would walk away from people again. And gradually, she just regained her power, all the power that she'd given away to all that fear and all the negative thoughts. And then she had this newfound energy. And that's when trust kicked in. For the first time in months, she actually believed that she could return to being the number one salesperson onto the principle of commitment. This was her action plan. She picked up the phone every day, and she started calling every single one of her clients and asking for the business. In 2 days, she had two loans, 50% increase over the prior month. And Vicki never looked back from that moment on. With focused attention, she actually focused on that plan every single day and blocked out all the negativity in her office and the external environment. The results of Vicki clearly demonstrate the power of the principles. In 1 month, she went from generating $140,000 in loans to $3.2 million. And in 5 short months, she regained her position as number one. The impact of our thinking is very powerful. If we shift our worldview, how we see the world, other people, and the world around us, it shifts our outcome. We create different results. So in the midst of the crisis today, I find that many people are dwelling on fear, negativity, doubt, and uncertainty. And it's influencing our moods, it's influencing our decisions, and it's influencing our outcomes. But through the principle of focused attention, everyone has the capacity to move beyond fear if we choose to do so. But 1 month in to Vicki turning her business around, she shared with me that she had a heart's desire, something very personal. How many of you have a heart's desire, something you've deeply wanted to achieve, but you haven't as of yet, but you want to? And here's what I discovered about Vicki. This was impacting upon her business every day. Even though she was number one, she brought enormous amount of sadness into her business. She was 38, the clock was ticking. She and her husband had been attempting to have children for over 10 years. And she had had a couple of miscarriages in 7 years, and after every one, she just grew more saddened. She was absolutely heartbroken. And she began having these negative thoughts about herself. Well, we know how this goes. I can't conceive, even though no one in my family has a problem. I'm to blame. Something is drastically wrong with me. I'm a bad wife, even though my husband's never indicated that. Over and over again, her mantra was, something is drastically wrong with me because I'm not succeeding. Every time she would see a child, she would become depressed. But the doctor said her only option was in vitro, fertilization. But they had spent all their money on all these procedures throughout the past 10 years. So they decided to adopt. And that's when synchronicity occurred. And it normally occurs when we get ourselves committed to something. Her husband acquired a position out of 800 applicants, and along with the Cayman insurance policy. And they could have the in vitro procedure. So what was Vicki's action plan? She'd been programming herself with this negativity for 10 years. That is not easy to reverse this. Because we have deeply embedded memory files. It's like a cabinet full in a basement of our mind of all these negative memories. And one by one, she started going after them. Because Vicki's very smart, and she was very ambitious and very determined. And that's what focused attention is about. So she made a plan. She used the first 5 principles. Get clear. I can have a child. I'm responsible for my own decisions. I'm going to trust my own inner voice. I'm going to make a commitment to this every single day, and I'm going to stay focused on it no matter what's going on. And as she did that, and she went to the doctor, he says, you know there's only a 30% chance that you're going to succeed. And she says, I don't want to hear about this. I have the power within me, she said, to have a child, and a child I'm going to have. Nonsense. So it's a month later. Good news. She's pregnant, probably with twins, the doctor said. She burst into tears when she put the phone down, and it was just all this pent-up energy was finally released. And then 3 weeks later, she discovers she's going to have triplets. And what do you think the doctor said? Vicky, I think it'd be better if you have embryo reduction. Because, you know, when you have triplets, you usually lose one or two. And I want you to succeed. Vicky said, nonsense. I am my final authority. I am going to make sure that I have children, and I'm using the principles to do it. She accepted responsibility for the decision. She made a commitment every single day to trust her inner voice. You know how this is going. Made the commitment and focused attention. And then a few weeks later, she was home free. She no longer had the negative programming and the fear. And then she was informed that she was pregnant with two healthy boys and one girl. And she thought, amazing, I'm actually going to have triplets. The doctor said, but Vicky, most people lose their triplets in week 22. You don't want to jeopardize this. And Vicky said, nonsense. Back to the principle of power. And she focused on her goal. And then tragedy struck. Her father died. He was an inspiration in her life. And she had to make a crucial decision, because if she traveled by plane, she was jeopardizing her success. So she made a crucial decision to grieve the loss of her father at home in bed. And then 32 weeks, exactly 1 year after she entered the EDGE program, she delivered triplets with a team of over 15 doctors and nurses. You know, when I saw her a month later, it almost still brings tears to my eyes. She and her husband were sitting there holding these triplets, and their faces were absolutely beaming with joy. And she said, Rita, these are my miracle babies. And they both had this deep appreciation and deep gratitude that they actually had an opportunity to fulfill their heart's desire. And how many of you have a heart's desire that you want to fulfill, and you know you can in one short year? I've seen it over and over and over again. So I'm going to ask you, how are you going to feel if you do? How are you going to feel if you don't achieve your heart's desire? And then within 2 years of raising the triplets, Vicky's husband gets cancer. He quits work, and he starts treatments, and now Vicky's fully responsible for supporting the family. But she wasn't going to allow any negativity into her family, and this is when she made a crucial decision. The triplets were going to be raised with the nine principles. No fear was going to enter her home. Her children would never understand fear and negativity like she did. A year later, when her husband recovered, they started exposing the kids to various social activities and sports. And by the time Nicholas was 4, he was golfing, and kids and adults alike were following him around the golf course. At the age of 6, Robbie discovered hockey, and he has won the state championship every single year since then. And Jacqueline is a whiz on ice. She's a straight-A student, and she's an artist and an actress. And this weekend, all three of the triplets are each performing on different cities in different sports. But you know how that goes if you're a parent. So all three triplets, Vicky says, are her miracles. But she says the amazing thing is about them, they're self-directed, they're self-motivated, and they're truly inspiring. They're kind, they're skilled, they're respectful, they are humorous, and they're very caring and supportive of other kids and adults. Now, Nick and Robbie are being headhunted by coaches across the country because they're turning 14 next year. Vicky is still the number one sales agent in her bank, and she's an inspirational speaker. She has retained that position through the financial crisis in the 90s, and she's still retaining it in the financial crisis today. She doesn't see that her business is going to change at all. And people in the real estate industry are always asking her, how do you do this? How you continue to perform? How do you continue to support your family alone with no matter what is going on in the financial arena? She says, the nine principles. So the Rogers family is truly inspirational because, as I said, the triplets were trained not to buy into fear, to own their power, accept responsibility for success, trust in their ability to excel, commit and face any obstacles, and focus on their passion daily. How many of you have grandchildren here? How many of you would like to have your grandchildren not have any fear? Yeah, I think every one of us could say that. How many of us would like to ensure that our children not have any fear? And don't we want all the children in the world to discover their passion and their power and not be raised with fear and reap the benefits of success like the triplets? Shouldn't that be a goal for our society? And if you're an employer, don't we want all of our employees to succeed? Don't we all want to succeed at that level? So think about what influence could we have today on future generations of each of us transformed our fear into a more positive vision of ourselves, our family, our community, and the world. Now, Vicki's story illustrated the first five principles. And now I'm going to move on to the next three. Acceptance, non-attachment, and alignment. This is Brad and Ashley's story. They fell madly in love when they were 25. And 10 years later, in 2001, their relationship was absolutely shattered. They had lost one half their fortune through their investments in the stock market. They were living way beyond their means. They were in denial about their present financial situation. They were paralyzed with fear, and they did not know how to transform their life. They were at the edge of a financial, marital, and personal crisis. And I probably think that most of us here today know someone who's facing a similar crisis. So when I met them, we began exploring their past. Brad was working for a defense contractor during the week and building his computer software company on the weekends. Ashley was heading a headhunting firm, and she was making, this is in the early 90s, way over $200,000. Brad was frugal. Ashley wore designer clothes, and she had impeccable taste. And after dating a year, they married. Within 3 years, they had two children. Brad had quit his job. He had moved out his company out of the spare bedroom. They bought a new home, and he was expanding the business throughout the United States and Europe. But a few years later, a company came to them with an incredible offer, and he decided to take it. And he actually generated millions way before the dot-com era. And at that point, Ashley became enamored with bigger and better. And we've been seeing a lot of that happen in the last 10 years. And they immediately upgraded their lifestyle. Bought a million-dollar home, multi-million-dollar home, luxury cars, expensive art, designer furniture, and the list goes on. And they thought they would always be wealthy, so they decided to invest their money in the stock market. And they contacted a stockbroker who was handling money for the best and the brightest in Silicon Valley. And he told them that he thought they should be in risky investments because they were young and they would always be generating millions. And they believed him. And they left the meeting and said, there's no chance that we're going to fail. Now, how many of us believe that we weren't going to fail in the stock market over the last 10 years? So once they gave their power away to the stockbroker, they absolutely relinquished responsibility for the decision-making process. And they lost trust in themselves and each other. And that's when their relationship started being strained. And then they started focusing on acquiring material possessions. Brad then invested in another computer company, but he forgot to tell Ashley. When she found out, she felt utterly betrayed. And to compound the strain on their relationship at this moment, their stockbroker informed them they had lost one half of their portfolio, which was worth millions upon millions. Instead of taking stock of maybe this was a wake-up call and something wasn't working in our life, They kept on buying. The spending sprees increased. Brad could easily drop $600 a night for dinner with a buddy. Ashley would go out and buy a $1,200 toaster. Yes, I don't know. Has anybody seen a $1,200 toaster? And their relationship unraveled. Brad moved out of the house. They started working with a marriage counselor. And that's when they decided to work with the nine principles. Because Ashley said, I am madly in love with my husband. I just don't know how to make this work. So this is what their goal was. They wanted to create financial responsibility. They wanted to bring back their relationship and have emotional and physical intimacy. And they wanted to secure a solid financial future. So back we go to the past, because our past is linked to our present. We are stuck. We are plateaued. We're in the situation we are personally if we're in crisis, or in this country because we're in crisis, because of the past. And we don't seem to learn from it. So that's the key element of starting to transform our lives, is go to the past and learn from our mistakes and past decisions. So what Ashley discovered, her father was fiscally responsible. He would give his money to other people to invest, and he would lose it. Well, she knew she did the same thing. She was just invested in the same pattern. Brad was raised the opposite. His family was very frugal, and he had built his computer company being very frugal and very prudent. Ah, but then he started listening to all his friends. They were making enormous amount of money in the stock market, and he thought, so can I. And as he said, I became greedy. So what was their action plan? First, they had to gain power over their finances. Second, they accepted responsibility for what had happened, and they hired a financial advisor. Then they dismissed their stockbroker. They literally tore up all their credit cards. They created a budget, and they actually stuck to it. And with trust, Ashley decided to start making money. And that's when we looked at, what is she a passion for? And so what she looked at is, she loved organic food. She was really enamored with the environment. She was a writer and interior designer. So we put together a business where she would be thriving, knowing that the crisis was going to come up. And she enrolled in a green building certificate program, and she began writing green and conscious living articles. And with commitment, within a period of 2 months, she won an interior design contest. She had published 2 articles. She had acquired 2 clients. With the principles of power, responsibility, trust, and commitment. At this point, they started coming together, because Brad, until this point, really didn't want to deal with the past. So they both decided to face their deep-seated fears. And they admitted that they had been living beyond their means for years. This wasn't an easy feat for them to come to terms with this, because when you come to terms with something, a past decision that has damaged your life in some way, you have to accept responsibility for it. So now we're going to begin talking about the principles of acceptance, non-attachment, and alignment. And acceptance talks about the heart. Now you can imagine, if you were in this situation, you might be a little judgmental and critical. And Bradley and Ashley have been criticizing each other for years, decimating each other every single day. They hadn't had a positive word to say about each other in years, they told me. You can imagine how it feels on a heart level. So this is what we did. We started looking at not blaming each other and accepting responsibility for everything we did in the past. And as they had some understanding of each other's past patterns and how they got into the situation they were in, they stopped blaming each other. They actually forgave each other. And they actually had compassion for themselves, for their own humanity. We're all human. We have learning experiences. We make decisions that really we wish we hadn't made, but we do. And it leads to outcomes that sometimes we're guilty and shameful about. And that's how they were feeling about themselves. And they got rid of all that guilt and shame, and we went on to the principle of non-attachment. Now, this is about our self-worth. And this is where we are as a nation. For Brad and Ashley, they perceived their self-worth as their material possessions. And their self-worth had been entangled with their net worth. That's why why they were looking for more and more and more, buying, 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 chasing the elusive more. And what it did, it has created the breakdown in their relationship. So what they came to terms with is what was important. And what was important was their relationship, their children, their career, and making sure that they had meaning and purpose in their life in the future. Once that happens, we can move to the principle of alignment, where actually they were in harmony with themselves, they actually recognized what it is they valued, what was important, and they could start working together in unity. How can you solve a problem if you're not working in unity? If we're blaming, complaining, judging, making excuses. So that's when we decided to develop an action plan. And by the way, there is an order when you're working with the principles, even though it's acceptance, which is the healing of the heart, alignment's the healing of the mind, and actually alignment's the healing of the spirit. See, we could not work on their financial future and have a secure financial future until they heal their relationship. And to heal their relationship, they had to heal their heart, as I said. And at that point, they reclaimed their physical and emotional intimacy through the principle of acceptance. Then we moved on to, as I said, non-attachment and alignment. And by that point, they had released all their fear, their deep-seated feelings of feeling helpless, hopeless, powerlessness, negativity, and all the judgment and criticalness. And their distraction, spending money. And you'll see all these principles and imbalances right here. Each principle leads to a quality. And if you're out of balance, you will see the corresponding imbalance with each principle. You move from helplessness, powerlessness, restlessness, hopeless, distraction, being critical, controlling, having tension, and then projecting everything onto everybody else. Everybody else is a problem out there. It's not me at all. So what did Brad and Ashley do? They sold their dream home. They sold their luxury cars. They moved to a new state. And they actually invested in a home and strong, and they had rental property with a strong cash flow. And they enrolled their kids in leadership programs. And over the last 7 years, Ashley has published in over 50 magazines nationwide. Brad has a thriving computer business, and they are solid financially. Now, they all transformed their life in 1 year, just as Vicki and Steve did. And you, too, can transform your life in 1 year if you so choose. And the last principle is interrelationship. Interrelationship helps us see that everything in the world is interconnected. If something is out of balance in your personal life, it affects your business life and vice versa. If something is not working physically, it affects your mind, your heart, and your spirit. Does this make sense? And that's what we're finally understanding, how everything is interconnected. And one thing impacts upon the other. So we can be fully empowered to achieve our limitless potential and turn any crisis around using these 9 principles. Now, Steve, Vicki, Brad, and Ashley were anxious to share their stories in the hope that their successes would inspire each of you to transform any fears that are blocking your potential. Yes, we are in a world crisis, but I believe, and so do Steve, Vicki, Brad, and Ashley believe, that the power is within each of us to create a new world. That humanity has the capacity to embrace the qualities of the 9 principles. That we can have creative vision. That we can act with integrity. That we have wisdom, courage, discipline, compassion, humility, inner peace, and unconditional love within each of us. Rather than live in fear, greed, and dishonesty. Khalil Gibran, the famous poet, artist, and philosopher, and actually my kindred countryman, said in his book, The Prophet, "The self is a sea boundless and measureless. And our individual and collective potential is boundless, measureless, and limitless. When we develop this potential, it has a rippling impact around the world. Our potential ripples out in the sea from continent to continent, and one by one, we transform the world. So I challenge each of you to make a commitment in this moment, to seize the opportunity of the crisis, to leave fear behind, and create a new world for yourself, your family, your community, and the world, and appreciate your unique contribution in making a profound difference in the world. Thank you.
I want to remind our audience we're listening to Rita George, an author and transformational strategist, who's talking to us about the nine principles of transformational leadership. As we move into the Q&A period, I guess I'll lead off, and then if the audience would think about their questions, and please raise your hands. Rita, there's some really interesting words here that would be nice to unpack, and at least one of them that occurs to me is this word transformation, and would look forward to you maybe expanding a little bit on that. And what I have in mind is this: there's this notion of change, certainly, and we often hear that we humans are resistant to change, or we fear change, or whatever. And my goodness, we change lanes, we change channels, we change diapers, we change a tire every now and then. So, you know, change happens. But transformation sounds a little like more. Besides just more letters, there's more to it. And so expand a little bit on what you mean by this notion of transformation.
And Tom, you hit right on it. Change is about behavior. You change your behavior. You drive to work a different time, different place. It's just all it is. It puts it in your actions are different. Now, transformation is a different whole thing, and it's tied to neuroscience. It's really looking at your worldview. It's how you think, how you see the world. It's your paradigm you operate out of. And from your thinking, we make specific decisions. Those decisions lead to specific action, and the action leads to certain consequences. And that's what the transformation is, that the results are different and it's lasting. And what I shared with you in the stories, these are people that went through transformation over 15 years ago, and they still retain that transformation that they made 15 years ago, and it's ongoing. So that's kind of the difference. Does it make sense?
And as I may just follow on one other word, and then please raise your hand with a question. The word edge, what are you getting at in that? In other words, I can think of, let's see, I fall off the edge, or, gee, that was kind of edgy, or, you know, so talk a little more about the word edge in your program.
Actually, with the word the edge emerged, it was 1987, before it was edgy, before anybody really talked about the edge. And the edge to me meant that you're going to jump off the edge into the abyss of the unknown, and really it's only in the unknown do you really discover the creative answers to entering a new world. Because I feel when you're on the edge, you're kind of attached to, clinging to the fear and your past and the negative programming that's preventing you from developing your limitless potential. So it's like a metaphor. It's how do you get off the edge, off into the unknown with a parachute, and the parachute are the nine principles, because I'm certainly not asking you to jump without one. Of course, sometimes we just do that because we don't know what else to do, but it's not a pretty scene when we land.
I have a question.
Yes.
I'm curious to hear what your definition of a leader is. Some may say can you be a leader if you don't have any followers? I don't necessarily agree with that. You speak a lot about empowerment and success. And when you apply that specifically to leadership, where does that take you?
Well, let me tell you, my definition is, now leadership to me is not about position power. It's not about our title. It's not about authority. It's not about how much money we have. It's not about our net worth at all. It's about four things I look for in leadership: the character, your consciousness, the type of thinking you have, your competency, and actually the contribution you're making, the results of your thinking, and the decisions you make, and your actions. So leadership is about who you are and what you do and what you end up creating. Does that help?
So as we, maybe I just intrigued with the words we're using here, because words matter and language matters. So just to take this leadership thing just a little bit further, I get the impression that we're talking about the importance of self-leadership, certainly, and then there is this notion of being able to influence others. So it must be that you consider them closely connected. Is that
yes,
right?
I do.
Elaborate on that a little bit.
Well, you know, when people, I told these stories, I have 100 stories, but I picked what I consider ordinary people who I think have achieved and initiated some extraordinary transformation. And each of them has been inspiring. It's not that they just transformed their own life. They have literally had, they're like that ripple in the sea. They've had a transformative impact upon hundreds and thousands of other people. And someone like Steve, who's writing a book on courage, will have the capacity in the future, literally, to influence millions of people. And that's what I mean by you look within yourself and say, what can I do? And what can I really do in this crisis when so many people are in pain and so many people need help? And what happens is, as we go through that inner transformational process, we discover a part of ourself that we never even known existed. For example, I would not be here today if I had not had that experience on that bridge at King Farouk's Palace in Alexandria, Egypt. I was on a trajectory point of being a well-known public speaker, being on the faculty of all these universities, having a column in the San Francisco Examiner, being a politician in the city, and everything else. And then all of a sudden, my life merged into a whole different direction. And from that, I discovered elements of myself, and I also discovered the 9 principles. And the 9 principles is what I have the most, I'm the most proud about, because it's the contribution that it's made to other people's lives. And then those people have made a contribution to hundreds and thousands of other people's lives. And I just want to be part of the ripple and say we're all part of the ripple in the sea. It's just a matter of what are we going to do with it? How impactful can we be?
So let's just, if I may, and I see a question, but let me just, if I could, follow on that. To the extent there's a little bit of a cynic in all of us, you know, yeah, the old little bit, the yeah, but stuff. And I was curious what you find in working with individuals as well as organizations and clients and so forth. What kind of pushback do you get, and how do you deal with it? And especially I'm curious about the sort of thinking that would say, oh, gee, Rita, this just sounds like the power of positive thinking or whatever. But I was just, what sort of pushback do people seem to come up with?
Oh, I have some great stories. I remember going into Birkenstock sandals, and they were all like, we're fine. And, of course, the CEO saying, yes, but our sales have plateaued for 3 years. Well, I know what the what we're fine is. It's everybody's resistance to transforming. Okay? I'm used to that. I get people being skeptics, being resistant, because that's part of the that's part of the transformational process. So I acknowledge it, I accept it, and then step by step, the transformational process unfolds through various strategies using the 9 principles. And step by step, people awaken. So let me give you an example. You're at the bottom of a mountain. You're at Yosemite. When you look around on that mountain, it's all you see is trees. You get to the middle of the mountain. Ah, there's some open space. I may even see some sky. There's some light. You get to the top of the mountain. What do we see? Ah, 360-degree view. We see everything. Our whole awareness, our worldview is totally shifted. It's a new world. It's a dawn of a new day and a new life for ourselves. I just keep focused on that goal, Tom. That's where I see when I'm working with an individual or a company we're going. My role is to facilitate that process. I understand that people are going to get waylaid along the way and be resistant to getting to the top of that mountain, because that means you will have had to give up something. And the giving up is your fear. And believe it or not, we're kind of wed to that fear. It makes us feel comfortable. We know it. It makes sense, because the unknown is what's scary. But it's in the unknown that we discover a new world. And it's in the unknown that we're going to right now in the crisis. Because when we come through this crisis, we will be different people, different families, different communities, and a whole different world, and so will the business world. It's just a matter of, do we want to go kicking and screaming? Or do we want to have fun and make it an adventure? And that's what edge jumping is about, the adventure.
Yes, question. You were on the bridge, and you had the decision to go backwards or forwards, and you decided to go forwards, and you developed these nine principles. You have now created a book for our benefit, so I don't have to recreate these nine principles. So my question to you is, not in a facetious way, but can't I read the book and do this without a facilitator?
Yes, you can. Actually, I've had people read this book before it was published, and they would call me, and they would say they actually discovered, and these were well-known leaders and highly successful business people, that they actually had a fear that they did not know existed, and it was blocking them from their success at a late level they knew they were capable. So people have transformative situations reading the book. Of course, if you want to, what happens to some people is they get stuck in the process, and that's when you need a facilitator.
Other questions? So read as...
There's one right here, Tom.
Oh.
Sure, thank
you. I'm not sure if this is a comment or a question, but I was intrigued by your reference a little earlier to the fact that the changing of the tapes, the negative tapes, is actually a neurological outcome. A change is a neurological outcome. And I'm sure a number of people in the room heard the story on NPR this morning about the person with the amputated arm and the pain of the shadow, and how through, frankly, reworking neurologically with his healthy arm in a mirror, that issue disappeared. And it was simply, I say simply, that isn't correct, but it was a mechanical approach to restructuring a neurological view, the body's reaction to an old tape.
Yes, that's what's going on. It's more complicated than that.
Yes,
but if we go
absolutely.
Back to Steve, how did Steve get rid of this viewpoint that he was a cripple and handicapped?
Mm-hmm.
Because that was his perception. That's how he saw himself. So as you work with each of the principles, and this is what I discovered when I created them, each principle starts shifting the neurological functioning in your brain, okay? And by the time you get to the ninth principle, if you worked with them for a while, you know that you've changed what's going on in your brain, in your mind. It becomes obvious to you. But you've really got to work them, you know? Yeah, and Steve, if you met Steve today, and it's 15 years later, you wouldn't believe that that was his story, okay? Especially when you see him vaulting down the street, yes, doing his 10 miles. He's running a marathon, by the way. That's his next goal. He's going to do 13 miles on crutches.
Could you elucidate more about the non-attachment? I mm-hmm. understand you mentioned like material possessions.
Yeah.
What other kind of things?
Our attachment to social approval, like I had, always looking for everybody else to approve of us because we're not whole without their opinion. Our material possessions, our titles, our positions, anything that we think gives us power in the outer world, rather than looking at our own personal value and self-worth. And until we get there, we're not going to move to be in alignment internally within ourselves and actually be aligned with our own spirit.
So I think we've come to the point, Rita, where we're going to have to kind of conclude here. And what I'd like to do is give you a moment, if you could, to share with us what would be the one or two key takeaways. I mean, you're kind enough to have provided us a very handy reference sheet here of the nine principles and the qualities and so forth. But if we were to go away with the one or two things that you would ask us to think on and reflect on, what would that be?
Well, I guess I'd ask everybody to reflect upon this. With what's going on in today's crisis, how are you going to protect yourself from all the negativity? You better come up with a tool, okay? Because remember, a crisis cycle lasts for almost 20 years, and I believe we're like in the third year. Second thing I might reflect upon is what contribution do each of you want to make in the next 16, 20 years with your talents, your gifts, and your individual uniqueness? Because I personally believe each of us has an enormous amount of power in this world. And it's not going to be the politicians who solve these problems, okay? It's going to be us. And as each of us transform, that's what I want to leave you with. The world does transform.
So can we put our hands together for Rita George, please?
Thank you.
I want to thank Rita George, an author and transformational strategist, for sharing some really important and useful insights with us tonight. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, celebrating over 100 years of enlightened discussion, is adjourned. Thank you all for coming.